A Southwest Airlines plane made an emergency landing yesterday due to a rare mid-air engine explosion. The jet's left engine blew shortly after takeoff, and according to the FAA, pieces of shrapnel flew into the plane's fuselage and at least one window. The passenger next to that window died. Seven others were injured. We're talking about the state of the airline industry here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seth Kaplan is a managing partner at Airline Weekly. That is an airline trade publication that's focused on trends and issues in commercial passenger aviation worldwide. Seth, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, bring us up to speed on what is happening in Philadelphia with Southwest Airlines. What do we know at this hour?
Yeah, NTSB... Investigators are there. They were there almost immediately yesterday and have already released some preliminary findings that seems to have something to do with metal fatigue with a fan blade within the engine.
Okay, what does metal fatigue mean? Because I've been hearing that this morning, and I don't understand what metal fatigue is.
Yeah, it's kind of as it sounds in terms of, you know, when we say fatigue, like anything that just sort of gives out, just like a person who's too tired. It's metal that's just sort of worn out. So you can have that either with the airframe itself. You know, there have been a few times over the years where a hole just emerged in the fuselage of an airplane, for example, blamed on metal fatigue with that aluminum. Or in this case, they're saying preliminarily, at least, it seems that the metal inside the engine, the fan blade, it seems, might have given out. And then generally in situations like these, like this one, there's something else that goes wrong too. There are all kinds of redundancies in place that, of course, things go wrong all the time on airplanes and nobody gets hurt. So for this to actually happen, where you have a passenger die, where you have a fan blade, you know, pierce the fuselage, pierce the window, my guess, only a guess at this point, is that we're going to hear that, you know, perhaps something else failed too in order to allow that engine cowling, that cover, to also give way.
So what kind of investigation will happen going forward on this? How will this play out?
Yeah, it could take, I mean, until we have final findings, it could be many months or in excess of a year. But the NTSB these days especially does a good job of doing what they've already done, which is, they don't wait until they know everything to say something. And that's important because then airlines can begin looking into the problem. Southwest has already said that it's going to inspect all of its engines, based on what they know so far. It says that's going to take about 30 days. I'm sure other airlines that have this same engine, which is a very popular engine, common on many other airlines that we fly as well, are looking into that as well. There will be all kinds of testing in labs, testing of that metal.
So does that put fleets of planes out of commission on a rotating basis? Will that impact air travel in any way?
Southwest says that the impact should be minimal. We're fortunate that you almost hate to use that word when you're talking about something this serious, fortunate. But in terms of timing, just on a routine basis, we are in kind of a lull in terms of travel right now. You know, we're beyond sort of the spring break, Easter, Passover period, but still well before Memorial Day, which is when things pick up again. And so with Southwest saying that this is going to take about 30 days, you do the math there, that still kind of puts us in mid or late May before Memorial Day. So they're probably, especially an airline, a giant airline with 700 aircraft and kind of a lot of flexibility to move them around, probably going to be able to do this without too much disruption. Now, we'll have to see if the FAA does anything else here, because it too, depending on what comes out, could mandate something else in terms of more accelerated inspections. That hasn't happened yet. So that's not to say that that we know the whole story now. We most certainly don't. But in terms of what we know right now, I don't think it's going to be anything where passengers are going to notice the disruption. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, nothing more disruptive than all the other kinds of things that disrupt travel, weather and so forth on a daily basis.
Well, with safety on our mind here, let's move on to Allegiant Air, which found itself at the center of a major story that aired on CBS's 60 Minutes on Sunday. Let's listen to correspondent Steve Croft speaking with John Golia, who served on the National Transportation Safety Board.
You're a former member of the NTSB. Would you fly on an Allegiant plane?
I have encouraged my family, my friends, and myself not to fly on Allegiant.
So some pretty strong words there, Seth, but can you give us the general breakdown of what this investigation found?
Yeah, CBS sort of picked up, and they said this too, where the Tampa Bay Times left off. Tampa Bay Times newspaper, of course, down in the Tampa, St. Petersburg area where Allegiant has a large base, spent a long time looking into allegations that Allegiant just wasn't maintaining its planes to standard, wasn't doing as good of a job as other airlines, a series that ran back in 2016. It's easy to find online if anybody wants to look at it. And so then CBS did some more work with that. They got the maintenance records from a number of airlines and sort of finally answered a question which I myself had been wondering, which is, okay, we know that all of these things have gone wrong on Allegiant, but how do they compare to other airlines? CBS says that Allegiant was 3.5 times more likely to have these somewhat serious and in some cases rather serious issues occur than other U.S. airlines. They compared Allegiant against Delta, American, United, JetBlue, and Spirit. And I thought it was significant that they threw Spirit in there because Spirit is also what you call an ultra-low-cost airline, a budget airline.
Yep.
Like Allegiant in some regards in terms of the bare-bones service. But what CBS found is that Allegiant, was kind of out there in terms of the rate of occurrences of these incidents happening, whereas other airlines, including budget airlines, didn't have those incidents occur at the same rate. What CBS also alleged in the story is that there are things that are going unreported because they say, based on claims by the pilot union and others, that the company discourages the reporting of incidents. And they said there was a rather serious incident after CBS began asking questions that happened. It was out in Fresno, California, where a plane landed. There were fumes in the cabin, later said to be noxious fumes,
mm-hmm.
and that passengers, instead of being sort of evacuated right away, deploying the slides, were kept on board for a little while and taken off in a more orderly fashion, with their personal belongings, things you wouldn't have done if you were evacuating a plane. And the allegation is that Allegiant did it that way to sort of avoid the image of an evacuation and having to report it as such. So these were some serious allegations in the report. Not all new. Allegiant, by the way, came out swinging at CBS, said, this is all old news, that they have rigorous safety procedures in place, and that they don't pressure employees to underreport issues. On the contrary, they said, anybody who doesn't report issues is in violation of company procedures and the law.
The allegations there.
Right. They did. That's kind of what they've maintained all along, that they're a safe airline and getting safer. By the way, we'll have to see here as time progresses what the impact is. The best way to measure how the public feels about all of this will be if there's an impact on Allegiant's bookings. The next time that we can expect them to be questioned is actually a week from today, they happen to have a previously scheduled earnings call. You know, they're going to release their first quarterly
profits, all airlines
do. And they'll have to talk with the analyst community and answer questions. And among those questions, I'm sure, will be, what kind of impact they've seen. You know, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Here, this is a week where Southwest, actually had a passenger, as we discussed before, die aboard one of its planes yesterday. But Southwest came into that with a very good reputation for safety. And, you hate to really put this in economic terms when we're talking about the loss of human life, but, we do look at sort of both sides of the business. And I found it interesting that yesterday, these are publicly traded airlines, Allegiant's shares actually declined by more yesterday after having fallen quite a bit since it was first announced that the 60 Minutes report was going to air, even before it aired. Mm-hmm. Even yesterday, Allegiant fell by more than Southwest on a day when Southwest actually lost a passenger. With Allegiant, of course, that didn't happen. So that tells you that there's some concern,
about
the
safety
community,
right,
that people are avoiding Allegiant. We'll have to see if that's what's actually happening.
Seth Kaplan is with us, managing partner at Airline Weekly. That's an airline trade publication looking at trends and issues in commercial passenger aviation worldwide. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have concerns about safety when it comes to flying? And what determines what airline gets your business? Are you impressed or swayed by viral videos, for instance, of passengers being dragged off a plane, or by stories about the handling of pets? Call in questions, insights, 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Seth, getting back to the issue at Allegiant, is it the age of their planes that's the issue here? Is it lax maintenance going on? What is causing the issues around safety?
Well, it seems to be a little bit of both if you listen to the allegations here. They do have, broadly speaking, two sets of airplanes. They have older airplanes, MD-80 series airplanes, and newer airplanes, Airbus 319s and 320s. Now, most of the issues that we've heard about occurred on those older MD-80 series airplanes. But on the other hand, other airlines have those planes in their fleets still. Mm. Delta has a large fleet of, in their case, MD-88s, the same series. American still has some MD-80 series airplanes as well. And we don't hear about these kinds of things happening frequently on those airlines. So the answer is yes and yes. It is the older planes at Allegiant that seem to be most impacted. An old plane doesn't have to be a dangerous plane. Delta, just to go back to them, has one of the older fleets. I mean, it's getting newer, but one of the older fleets in the business. But an excellent reputation for safety, as do a number of airlines in the U.S. and around the world who have old fleets. So you can maintain an old plane and keep it in perfectly safe fashion. So the good news is that Allegiant is probably just sort of automatically becoming safer as they rather rapidly retire those older aircraft and bring the new ones into their fleet. But of course, you wouldn't want to have to rely on that for them to become safer. You'd want to know that they're doing something more proactive. I mean, they surely are. Look, they've come under a lot of pressure over the past few years. Especially because of that Tampa Bay Times series that I mentioned. So I'm sure they're doing a lot. The allegation here is that it's still perhaps not enough.
It is important to bear in mind as we move through this conversation on the state of the airline industry that flying remains really, really safe. When you look at the statistics overall, there were no commercial passenger jet deaths anywhere in the world last year. Yesterday's fatality was the first on a U.S. plane since 2009. Seth Kaplan is with us. He's managing partner at the airline trade pub Airline Weekly. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have concerns about safety when it comes to flying? What determines what airline gets your business? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Alarm bells sounded for some travelers when several aviation officials said on Sunday's 60 Minutes that they'd refuse to fly on budget airline Allegiant Air. According to the investigative report, Allegiant logged more than 100 serious mechanical incidents between January 2016 and October 2017. This comes as yesterday, a Southwest Airlines plane experienced a rare mid-air engine explosion. We're looking at this issue, getting into the broader conversation about what air travelers and airlines are up against today. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seth Kaplan stays with us. He's a managing partner at Airline Weekly. And you can join in with your questions, your insights on air travel. Do you have concerns about safety when it comes to flying? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Anne joining us from Monona. Hi, Anne.
Hi. Well, you know, for years and years, the airlines have been interested in huge profits, and I'm sure they're getting them in various ways. But I haven't heard much talk about the investigation of the kinds of mechanics and structural engineers who were being hired by the airlines, because if they had enough of them, and I suppose they're expensive, but and then they were extremely well trained, they would have said you shouldn't fly various planes. They need to be either repaired or, you know, replaced. And that doesn't seem to be happening. All the emphasis seems to be on potential terrorists and, you know, making people take their shoes off and things like that. But the people who really have control of safety in the airlines are the mechanics who make sure the planes are safe.
Anne, thanks for bringing that up. Maintenance crews, mechanics, Seth, what do we know about that? We know, you know, we see them get on the plane. They have a checklist sometimes, talking perhaps with the pilot. What is it like with mechanics today in the industry?
Yeah, well, you know, Anne is right that the airlines are very profitable now. They're also, you know, as we mentioned before, I mean, the industry is as safe as it's ever been. You know, I think more often than not, profits, although airlines, of course, you know, are out to make money, as all businesses. The good news is that because crashes are bad business too, it somewhat polices itself. Now, you still need all kinds of oversight. But obviously, you know, these allegations against Allegiant are hurting the airline to one degree or another. So, you know, as the air industry has become more profitable, it happens to have also become safer. You hope that they're reinvesting some of the money that they have in becoming safer. And when you look back over the years, I mean, as recently as the 1990s, crashes were common. We thought then that the industry had become rather safe because it was at that time, in historical terms, rather safe. But there would be a major crash in the U.S. every year or two. You know, 100-something people would die. And here it is. You know, now it's gotten down to, you know, about once a decade. In terms of maintenance, the procedures that are in place today are largely a result of the lessons learned from the past. there have been, questions at various times about the wisdom of outsourcing maintenance using contractors rather than in-house maintenance units. Different airlines do it different ways. And there, too, no clear evidence that one way or the other is safer. It's all about having the right procedures in place and making the investments necessary as Ann said, being proactive and detecting problems before they occur. There's been progress in that realm. Predictive maintenance, it's called, just better systems, better sensors. A lot of it is when something is acutely wrong. Obviously, you want to detect it before that, but just airplanes now picking up that something might be developing, and hey, next time the airplane's on the ground, you might want to check this out. So it's gotten better. The industry has gotten safer, but we saw yesterday there's room to go.
There's gaps, right? And thanks. Let's go to Mark now in Germantown, talking about price. Mark, go ahead.
Yes, my son flew. You talk about saving dollars and so on, and Spirit is another one where they're kind of no frills and so on. And my son flew Spirit a few years ago. He kind of got burned by them. He had to pay for bags, which he didn't check in ahead of time, check online ahead of time with. And then when he got on the flight, he asked for water. He was asked to pay for that and all these kind of things. So he's figured it out, and now he games them. He goes to the airport. He went with his girlfriend. They carried a big bag. They weighed it. They were slightly overweight, but they took a couple things out, put it in their backpack. They carried snacks and beverage on because they were going to get charged for that. So now he's got them figured out. I'm sure they were not real happy that, they weren't able to get any extra money out of them, but that's kind of the way the system seems to be going.
And, Mark, you bring up this point that the cost of flying has increased, it seems. We've seen a rise in the popularity of these budget carriers, like you mentioned, Spirit, Allegiant, of course, Frontier, JetBlue. Is there, Seth, a trade-off when it comes to price versus safety?
Generally not. And what Mark describes, by the way, yeah, there are people who, you'll talk to some people who say, I hate flying those airlines, and others who have learned to play the game are happy to do it. That very low fare that they offer, as of several years ago, the law changed. It used to be that you could offer a fare that didn't really exist, once you got done with the taxes and fees. But nowadays, it has to be possible to travel at that low fare. Now, it doesn't mean that you're going to get anything other than, hopefully safe air travel. But you might not get an advanced seat assignment, or you might not even get water, as Mark mentioned. But it does have to be possible to travel at that fare. And people play the game. They stuff everything they can inside their coat so they don't have to, pay for, in some cases, even a carry-on bag.
Yeah, and be sure to print out those boarding passes at home.
Yeah,
don't you dare go up to the counter.
No, exactly. But there are people who have fun doing it, and there are other people who say, look, I don't want to deal with that. I'll pay a little more to fly a more bundled airline. Southwest is kind of the most bundled airline, right, where a lot of most of what they give you is still included. But in terms of safety, the kind of seminal event was the Value Jet crash in the Florida Everglades back in 1996. And what seemed to have happened there was, an airline that was cutting corners, shoddy procedures, and a lot of people died when it was an oxygen canister that wasn't properly secured in the cargo hold, led to a fire. And that was really the event that that showed the industry, because passengers weren't willing to fly an airline like that, that you can cut corners on all the rest of it, and we see them doing that. Spirit, as Mark mentioned, includes basically nothing with the fare. But safety just kind of has to be off the table in terms of where you cut corners. Now, interestingly, if you watch that CBS 60 Minutes report, or it's been noted a few other places, you know, the CEO of Allegiant used to be one of the people running ValueJet back then. So there's that lineage. You know, not that you can necessarily draw a line there and connect that to this, but just kind of noteworthy that the real, you know, the last time something awful happened was at an airline with, you know, with some loose ties to this airline. But yeah, generally speaking, as I mentioned earlier, you know, when 60 Minutes compared Allegiant to other airlines, you know, I don't know whether they did this on purpose, but they did include Spirit, and I was glad to see that, and I was glad to see that, you know, Spirit was in there with all of the other fuller service airlines, you know, from a safety procedure. And when you look around the world, that's true too. These ultra low cost carriers, as they're known, and you mentioned in the U.S., the large ones are Spirit, Allegiant, Frontier, Sun Country in Minneapolis, which some people on the western side of the state, you know, you can drive over to St. Cloud and fly Allegiant. Yep, that's an option, or from Minneapolis.
You're hitting home here. We know Sun Country.
yeah. So right. So they are another one that's kind of going down that path. They used to be a little bit more of a full service airline. They've become more of an ultra low cost airline now. They were actually in the news for, not for safety issues, but for some
how they handled passengers.
The flights down to Mexico. So those are the ultra low cost carriers around the world. Anybody who's traveled to Europe might be aware of Ryanair, a giant airline over there, kind of the same ilk. Air Asia and Southeast Asia, and these airlines generally have excellent safety reputations. So for the past couple decades, there's been that distinction that you know, low fares mean giving up a lot of other things, but not hopefully safety. The allegation with Allegiant is that might not entirely be the case.
Right. Mark, thanks for the call. Let's go to Randy waiting in Pewaukee. Hi, Randy.
Good morning. Very interesting conversation. I think the only thing we haven't been talking about is the manufacturers of the aircraft and the power plants, the engines. Right now, we only have three major companies that produce jet engines, GE, Pratt & Whitney, and Rolls-Royce. And then we only have two manufacturers that actually produce the majority of the commercial airliners that we fly, which is Boeing and Airbus. And I think people have to look at the record of the two different companies, Airbus and Boeing, for their safety. And if you look at it closely, you can see that Airbus has a terrible safety record, and Boeing has a lot better safety record. As a passenger, I'll never fly on an Airbus. They've had so many problems, structural failure in midair, braking systems, wheels.
Yeah, Randy, thanks so much. Let's get Seth to respond.
Yeah, Randy, on the engines, interesting that, as you mentioned, the three manufacturers have all had issues over the past couple of years, but even just in the past week. We had what happened yesterday. That was a CFM engine. The CFM is a joint venture between GE and a French company, Safran, and then you had the FAA just earlier this week say that Boeing 787 Dreamliners, if they have Rolls-Royce engines, that's one of two engine options on the Dreamliners, they face some new and hopefully temporary restrictions in terms of how far the airplane can be from a landing site when it flies intercontinentally. And Pratt & Whitney has had all kinds of issues with the introduction of a new kind of engine that's become very popular. It's called geared turbofan engines, for anybody who's familiar with them. Become very popular on new aircraft. Some of the new Airbus 320 series aircraft that are coming into the system. So all three of those manufacturers have had their issues. In terms of Boeing versus Airbus, it's some of it just depends on how you measure things. I mean, these are all extraordinarily safe aircraft, you know, in any kind of historical term. And you know, most of the aircraft that we fly on, you know, that have been manufactured over the past couple decades, if you look at Boeing versus Airbus. I've seen that claim. I can't say that I can conclude that one is significantly safer than the other. Part of it is that you just don't have a very big sample size in terms of incidents. Because the industry has become as safe as it is now. There's no question that some non-Western aircraft, some Russian-built aircraft, have poorer safety records than others. But again, in the case of, we're talking about Allegiant, its Airbus fleet is doing far better than its older McDonnell Douglas fleet. So, generally speaking, when people have asked me, even just friends and family in my life over the past few days, would you fly Allegiant? And it's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is sort of, what's the alternative?
What are my options?
Right. What are your options? Let's face it. The reason people fly Allegiant is obviously not because it's a luxurious product. It's because it's cheap and rather convenient transportation. Sometimes it's a nonstop flight to Las Vegas or Orlando rather than connecting somewhere, for example. Right. So. So I say, well, what's the alternative? Are you asking would I fly Allegiant rather than another airline? Or are you thinking of driving from Appleton or from Rockford, Illinois, people in Janesville or Madison who drive down to Rockford to fly Allegiant, let's say, to Las Vegas? Because, if somebody is thinking instead of driving instead of flying Allegiant, I think that's a poor assessment of risk, even though they're right to be concerned about the things they've heard about Allegiant, because the reality is that 35 or 40,000 Americans die every year in car crashes, whereas, we talked about it earlier, the very first person, died on an airliner yesterday in 9 years in this country. So same thing, in terms of the Airbus versus Boeing question, flying in general is so much safer than any other alternative that I think anytime you have an opportunity to fly, that's generally going to be the safest way to get to where you're going. When I fly and friends, family members will say, have a safe trip. And I'll say, are you talking about the 10 mile car ride?
Car ride versus, right.
Cause that's more dangerous, usually than the flight, which is not to overlook the risks.
Like what happened yesterday. Yeah, global and U.S. commercial aviation deaths have, as we heard, been trending downward for more than a decade due to a whole wide variety of factors. One is that airlines have adopted safety programs designed to spot these potential problems before an accident occurs, rather than relying on learning lessons from analysis after a crash. We're talking about the state of the airline industry this hour of the morning show. Seth Kaplan stays with us. He's our guide. He is managing partner at the publication Airline Weekly. Gathering your questions, your insights, your tips on flying, they're welcome. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get back to the conversation and your questions, your insights in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Sun Country is feeling some heat after it left around 250 passengers stranded in Mexico and told them to find their own way home after it canceled flights because of a blizzard. U.S. Senator Tina Smith of Minnesota is now calling for the Federal Department of Transportation to look into the situation about the way Sun Country handled the cancellations this past weekend. We're looking at the issues within the airline industry on the heels of Southwest Airlines yesterday having an engine explosion. You're with us on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Seth Kaplan is here. He's managing partner at the airline trade publication Airline Weekly. You can join in with your questions and your impressions of flying. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Dean now, who is joining us from Mount Horeb. Hi, Dean.
Hi. I've been flying for, close to 45 years, some of that in military, some in the airline. I just recently retired after a close to 30-year airline career. And I could say, and I've flown both Boeing and Airbus, and I didn't notice any difference. And as far as reliability and engines, I mean, I used to fly international. We'd be in that airplane would be flying for 10 hours. It'd be on the ground for a couple hours in Europe, turn around and fly back. You know, these airplanes are in the air, 15, 20 hours a day, and it's amazing the reliability of these things. And in my entire career, close to 30 years in the airlines, I've never had an engine problem. And so I think, the issue with the Southwest airplane, it's kind of a one-off. It's minuscule, the percentage of flights that have problems.
So, Dean, there, a pilot saying what we saw yesterday, basically an anomaly. It just doesn't happen. Seth Kaplan.
Yes, and that's exactly that's the data shows it. Really remarkable how much has to go right for this, what to me is still a miracle of flight to have become as routine as it is. And again, usually even when something does go wrong, there are enough redundancies in place that that everybody's okay. It's true. And nobody, back in the 1990s when you'd have a plane crash every year or two in the U.S. and people then marveled at how much safer the industry was, and statistically it was true. It was very safe compared to how it used to be. I don't think anybody predicted that we would get to the point that we're at, where literally, in the aviation insurance world, the challenge is how do you set insurance rates? Actuaries, the people who do that, they're challenged by how little data there is in terms of crashes, because they just almost never happen anymore. Certainly in the U.S. and in the Western world in general, and even in other parts of the world, it's safer now than it was in the U.S. a few decades ago. So it's remarkable. I fly a lot, I travel a lot, and I've certainly never had anything all that serious happen aboard any flight that I've been on. The invention's been set up. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, Seth, let me ask you this. What about the FAA in this conversation? What role has the FAA had in where we're at with safety today? And can it penalize airlines that fall short of meeting various guidelines?
Well, it was interesting. 60 Minutes aired allegations, and these also were in the Tampa Bay Times report, that the FAA is specifically with respect to Allegiant, not doing everything that it could possibly do. The FAA consciously made a change a few years ago to prioritize what they call compliance rather than enforcement. And basically, you might say, a little bit less stick and a little bit more carrot, kind of working more collaboratively from their perspective with airlines on issues. So they're less likely to just fine an airline than they might have once been, more likely to just go down with them to the you know, to the hangar, maintenance hangar, and work out problems.
Figure out the problem, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, look, again, you know, the result of, you know, sort of the sum total of everything that's happened over the decades is that we've gotten to this point where, you know, more people than ever are flying, and it's safer than ever, just in terms of, you know, actual you know, fatalities and so forth. But no, it's a question now that has made its way onto the radar of lawmakers, among others. This question about whether that approach by the FAA that they've taken over the past few years is the correct one.
Let's go to Dan now, waiting in Franksville. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Too bad back in the 80s when they deregulated it, they didn't have a minimum baseline for competition, meaning like a minimum price, you know, and then you would compete from that minimum price, knowing that if you go below that minimum price, you're going to put people at risk. You know, a lot of people died since the 80s when they deregulated. I just remember Alaskan Airlines. I mean, they got rewarded by just skipping maintenance schedules, you know, and then, you know, people would rat them out that worked there, and then they'd get fired, and the FAA would go, ho-hum, you know, here's a person that's telling them, this airline, the plane's going to crash, you know, and they get fired, and the FAA goes in there, oh, yeah, well, whatever, and then all of a sudden, Alaskan Airline goes down.
Well, let's bring in Seth there. What impact has deregulation had on the industry and on legacy airlines?
Yeah. That was one of the big moments in the history of the industry. It was 1978. The industry was deregulated. Prior to that, airlines couldn't just fly where they wanted to fly. They couldn't just charge what they wanted to charge. They had to ask the government for permission to start a new route, for permission to raise or lower fares. There were a lot of predictions back then about what would happen. Some have come true and some haven't. And really the one, and it was interesting, I was speaking recently, I was at a TV studio and, you know, getting ready to go on the air, speaking to somebody else there who was involved, doing now something else, but involved in airline deregulation back then. And he said to me, you know, I said, you know, what... you know, what has surprised you? And he said, actually, back then he was concerned about safety, and that's the big prediction that people had, the big concern that people had, that hasn't come true, because the industry is so much safer now than it was back then. Back in the 70s when this was all envisioned, crashes were very frequent. It was hard to go a year, for example, without a substantial airline crash with fatalities in the U.S., even though far fewer people were flying back then. You know, now we have several times as many people flying every year, and, you know, as we said, we go a decade now, without a fatality. Some of the other impacts of deregulation are, you know, reasonable people can disagree. I mean, there's no question the industry's safer. Whether or not that's because of deregulation or just kind of the progress of technology and learning lessons and all the rest of it. But the industry is far safer than it was back then. You have those other trade-offs with prices and service levels. It's far cheaper to fly now. Anybody who talks about how flying was in the good old days before deregulation is somebody who was fortunate enough to be able to afford it. You know, back then. Now it's become democratized. It is something where, yeah, you can get that, you know, $40 fare once in a while to fly to Orlando. But the trade-off there is that, of course, the product is unbundled, as airlines would say. You know, it's a la carte. You pay for what you use. But so, you know, so that's something where, yeah, generally you're paying less. In some regards, you might be getting less. But in terms of safety, that's the one thing that I think almost everybody looking at the data agrees that that was one concern that didn't pan out.
Let's go to Eve joining us from Pewaukee. Hi, Eve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My husband was an aircraft mechanic for many years, he kind of got out of the business about 13 years ago, so is no longer working in it. But one of the things that kind of drove him away, and I don't know if this is still the case today or how accurate it is, was that if you wanted to work as, you know, when he worked at, like, for example, Midwest Airlines, all the guys that worked on the planes were all licensed mechanics. And what things have been going to, he said, was one mechanic overseeing many, many people working on the plane that, let's say, are not licensed. I don't know if that's the case or how that's handled today since he's no longer in the business.
Eve, thanks for the question. Seth Kaplan, what about licensing?
Yeah, I'm, and I'd have to know more about the specific allegation there. I mean, yeah. There's not, you know, in terms of how U.S. airlines handle things, and you know, and their partners around the world, you know, there's no credible allegation out there that they're, you know, by and large using people who aren't licensed to work on the aircraft. You know, there's no question that they've, over the years, you know, maintenance being a big cost, you know, they've looked at ways, you know, how can they save money without compromising, you know, from their perspective, safety. Again, I'd have to know more about that specific allegation.
Yeah, and I want to get in one quick last question here, because Jim in Racine is also a pilot, and Jim has seen the best pilots go to larger airlines, lower-tier pilots fly for low-cost carriers. Have you seen a trend there?
You know, people change jobs for all kinds of reasons. There are times where somebody will go from a you know, what you might call a first-tier airline, a higher-service airline, to another airline because that's their path to become a captain. You know, the slow-growing airlines, it's hard to move from, as pilots would say, from the right seat into the left seat, you know. So, but, yeah, again, it's gotten to a point. There was a time when you could look at the business model of an airline and say, oh, maybe that airline's less safe, maybe the pilots are less skilled. But generally speaking today, you know, these are all highly skilled people flying the airplanes, and the fortunate thing is they're also now rather well compensated people after a difficult period last decade when airlines were taking all kinds of things away from their employees. It's now a better job again. Maybe not in some respect as good as it was, you know, many decades ago, but better certainly than it was here just a few years back.
And Seth, quickly as we wrap up here, what are you watching for as the summer travel season ramps up? What are you keeping an eye on, especially to down the line in the coming years?
Yeah, well, look, more people than ever are probably going to travel this summer. And with airport capacity and airspace capacity not really expanding, you know, what I hope we don't see, I mean, aside from obviously safety comes first, but beyond that, you know, we look for reliability. And over the years, you know, we've had these rough summers, you know, where when lots and lots of people were traveling, depending on thunderstorms and all the rest of it, airline operations can get messy. So let's see if they can get through this, because with all of this news coming out recently, you know, again, at some point the public looks to lawmakers to say, you know, enough is enough. You know, do something about whatever it is that's upsetting them. So,
Seth, thank you so much for joining us. Seth Kaplan, managing partner at Airline Weekly and Airline Trade Publication. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Brianne Shasso. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network.